everybody. Welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge. James is here.
We're back
to talk more about G-Witch and Heavenly Delusion. And we're going to work in some Oshinoko talk this week. About time we checked in on that one. It's a big hit. Everyone's watching it. Biggest premiere for the high dive service ever. So
good for them.
Yeah, good for them. They deserve that. So that we just sort of like see what I've been keeping up with that one week to week, just sort of out of my own volition. But why don't we talk about how that's going? So we're going to hit on that. I'm still kind of jet lagged. So excuse me if I'm like lower energy than usual. I did not take a nap today, which is a first since I've gotten back.
Gotta get those naps in.
They're quality nap. I for too long did not fully appreciate how glorious a nap is. So I recommend everyone take one.
I always joke that the true sign of adulthood is when you begin to appreciate naps and socks for gifts.
Yeah. I love socks.
They're so great. And like when you don't have to spend your money on them, but then they show up. It's awesome.
Yeah. I'm just now deciding to use a fill light. So that I don't have a weird shadow on my face. So, now it kind of looks like candlelit lighting. So, I don't know.
We should do like an actual candlelit episode, like a spooky Halloween one.
James, you're speaking my language.
Yeah,
I love spooky Halloween. I just decided to try and watch. You'll be happy about this because I think you really liked it. Midnight Mass.
Yes.
I never made it past the first episode last time.
That show's a masterpiece.
So I queued up the first episode again and I knew exactly where the part was that I'd fallen asleep at next time because I didn't remember any of it. But that new priest guy, I don't trust him. His hair is too... There's something about his hair. It's kind of setting off secretly vampire vibes. I don't know. There's a bunch of dead cats. I don't know. So if you guys all watched that when what came out and know everything about it, no spoilers in the comments, okay? I know the themes and that I think there's vampires, but I don't really know how anything plays out. So excited to enjoy it, mostly fresh-faced. But yeah, no, we should do a Halloween episode or just a spooky episode. But first they need to make more good spooky anime.
I was going to say, I'd probably just talk about Shiki again. Speaking of vampires, it would be like the umpteenth time I've been able to be like, yeah, Shiki.
Shiki is one of those shows where like everything about the narrative is good and everything about the character designs is bad. And it's just like, what is happening right now? Is this camp? Is that what this is? I mean, there's a guy with cat ear hair and he's in like a red pleather like suit.
Yeah.
A lot of zippers.
I appreciate the old man with like a literal ship's anchor for a beard.
Right. You know?
I think subtext and hairstyles is for cowards. I think if your hairstyle does not literally represent some kind of metaphorical object that is also, you know, indicative of your personality, then you're doing it wrong. So.
Speaking of which, my hair today it's giving Swamp Witch. Okay,
like the moss hanging over a weeping willow that's been like, you know, hammered through with a bunch of witching nails. Come on, that's sick.
Yeah,
that's real
James
sick.
Is painting a really great picture of my hair for our audio only listeners. All right, so I think first we're gonna talk about G-Witch. I got a lot of practice talking about this episode because yesterday I recorded with another podcast from a friend of mine, Stephen Heroes podcast, Giant Robot FM. And we talked about this episode for 3 hours. I don't know if the released audio version will be that long, but unedited, it was 3 hours.
I believe it. So much happened this week, Lindsay. It was one of those episodes where I had to take notes.
Yeah.
To like keep track of what the hell is going on because so much is happening.
So much is happening. I mean, Suletta isn't even in most of this episode because she's a depressed ball, just laying in the darkness.
Eating her midnight snacks in the harsh shadow of depressed shame. I,
yeah.
I,
I feel that. Her midnight snack, by the way, was just lunch meat out of like
a block of bologna.
It was ham. They even said, like, can you bring that ham over here? Because they were making soup. She was just eating ham out of a container.
We gotta let this girl live her life, okay?
Sometimes she's been through a lot.
You gotta eat a midnight. That needs to be the sequel to Midnight Mass, is Midnight Ham.
It's just replacing all the characters with Muppet pigs, yeah, like how they had.
Pig comes to town as like a as a priest.
I was thinking more like how Muppets had the segment that I think was called like Space Pigs.
Pigs,
was
in like space,
and it was just Star Trek with pigs, just same thing for So Letta's mostly out of the picture. Martin, after painting Cecilia's toenails and getting a pep talk,
decides the whoever storyboarded that scene was having a great time. They were that was like a dream. I feel like that was one of those dream come true scenes where someone has been waiting for like their entire careers to be like, I just want a scene where an absolute dom forces a little whiny baby boy to paint her toenails while she emotionally berates him for being a narc. And then the assignment comes to their desk and they're like, this is it. This is my moment.
There had to have been some kind of table read meeting. It's not like this is an adaptation of a manga or anything. So they get to decide. They just get to decide what goes in here, okay? And someone raised their hand and been like, I just think it would be cool if Martin painted the couch girl's toenails. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someone was like, yeah, I think that's good. Good thematic setting to have the Earthian kid who's trying to figure out if he made the right choice sending his friend off to space prison. Mm-hmm.
Space Gitmo.
We talked about that on the other podcast too. Yeah,
I just watched. It was actually kind of funny. During the last week of one of my speech classes, I had like two students left that didn't graduate. And mm-hmm. so I had to kill time. But we had to do something academic. So I had them vote on like a documentary to watch from a list. Mm-hmm. And they voted on an America post 9/11, a PBS documentary. Okay. It was really good. But man, the whole time I was just like, Gundam. Gundam. And it was talking about proxy wars and manipulating the Iraq Afghanistan conflict to like boost political what sits in. I was like, oh look, it's nothing has changed. Even hundreds of years into an alternate future, nothing.
Someone needs to take that meme that's like the wow cool robot, someone missing the point, but the one going over the head is just Iraq war.
It's Bush giving his axis of evil speech.
I hate George W. Bush so much.
He's the cute president. He does paintings now.
I hate that too. Yeah, yeah. have they laundered Kissinger's persona yet, or is he?
I don't know. There's not enough tide in the world to launder that man's track record. Nor do I think he would want it laundered. Yeah. I think he's proud to be a war criminal.
Donald Rumsfeld's dead, though, right? Like we all got to celebrate that.
Oh, I hope so. I think God. That sounds right.
Sorry for everyone listening here for Gundam. I got to find out if Donald Rumsfeld is
dead. Is it? That, yeah. That's dead? Like the perfect encapsulation of the show.
2021. Rest in piss. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Moving on. So,
but this is all relevant because Gundam.
It is.
It is not pulling any punches with the political commentary.
I mean, I've got stories. Because while I did not serve overseas in the military, plenty of people who I went to high school with joined immediately after I graduated 2005, guys. So,
peak shipping time.
Peak shipping out. My brother-in-law did serve over there actually, but, Donald Rumsfeld's a piece of shit. Kissinger turned 100 this past weekend.
I know, that's just a... Yeah. That's awful. I guess it is proof that, like, pure, like, spite and hatred really can fuel a long life. Like, you know...
I'm going to live to 130. Yeah. Writer strike. Coop is here in the comments, says this episode title is, we should change the title to is Donald Rumsfeld dead, the ANN after show. Yeah, why not? We can do this with a lot of Bush era politicians too. But speaking of politicians, Coop sent me this image and I sent it to James to look at beforehand. This is on Twitter. I believe Twitter user Mono Eye, where the first O is an O and the second O is a zero, made this image that I'm going to share with you. You may find it helpful when trying to figure out what is going on. There was a lot of political maneuvers in this episode that some of it harkened back to stuff that we haven't heard of since the prologue, thus meaning I had completely forgot about it.
I know. I need to go back and rewatch that thing, to be honest. Just
Oh, I feel like after the fact, the prologue might hit different.
I think my favorite comment was, or just in the post itself, where it says, and I totally agree, I think it's actually what makes the show really fun, is that Jeewish's setting is sort of easy to understand through the anime, but putting it all in a chart really just makes things even more complicated, which is true, because when you're watching the show, you're like, you know, all of these, anything with a corp or a technology after it, bad. Anything that Prospera is up to, bad.
Maybe
good.
But maybe justifiable. Like, it's all in revenge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Which is kind of
I feel image. Like if you replace all of these corporations with, like, what is it, Procter & Gamble, Smith's, Nestle? Arms company. Yeah, Nestle, right?
Yeah, Procter & Gamble, Nestle.
It's all the international corporations that own everything.
Frito-Lay. What Coca-Cola. Is it, Fox News Corp? I don't know. Or maybe that's Turn. I don't know. Like, they bought each other out so many times, too. Like, remember what was it?
Not Murdoch. Is it Murdoch?
It's
not
Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch?
That's a little demon. Rupert Murdoch. I feel like I've tapped into something.
Nabisco Kellogg's Coop offers that. Raytheon General Dynamics. You could do this with Disney. Yeah, I can't forget Disney. I was just thinking for a minute, the brief period where it was like AOL Turner, which was really funny because
I know
America Online doesn't exist anymore. Anyway, so what we're looking at here is the Mobile Suit Development Council, and this is both like post and pre, or post, including prologue and post prologue. And so we have the Benaret group, which everyone should be kind of familiar with at this point because it has Peel Technologies, which is, you know, Elon, and it's the one with the ladies who all look exactly the same. Grassley, which is where Shadiq is from, and his dad, who he currently has, you know, like locked up somewhere. Jaturk, which is, of course, Ghoul Jaturk's thing. Shinsei DevCore, that is Prospera's one there. And then Gundarm, which is what Minarine and Suleta founded, right? Okay, so that's all Benaret group. And Ox Earth, which I didn't remember what the hell that was when I watched this. I'm like, what is Ox Earth? Why is it?
No, I had to look that up. I was like, oh god.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, it's Ox Earth. I was like, is this a big revelation that I should know in this moment? Because I don't. So Ox Earth was working at the same time as the Vanadis Institute, which I do remember from the prologue, because that's where Soleta's mom, Prosper, was working at the time when they were working on the medical technology, right? And then they created the Gund format. So Ox Earth purchased and weaponized Gund from Vanadis. And I think they have been operating actually in secret this entire time, whereas everyone thought that they were completely like defunct.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Space Assembly League, which up until this point I thought was more of like a law enforcement sort of thing. And that's where, you know, like the lady who questions Bell, the scientist with all the sweets and stuff, she works for them. But now it's seeming that they have secretly been working with Ox Earth this entire time. And Ox Earth is the one who was supplying the the Lifrith Gundams illegally to Dawn of the Fold. Anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
No.
Certain Gundam fans are going to get mad at me for saying that. It doesn't really matter. It's no, just that...
I think that that's totally in keeping with Gundam, where the whole idea is that war is stupid. And the only reason it keeps going is because we have these, you know, labyrinthine webs of self-interested corporations or governments or whatever that are all making, you know, secret deals and treaties. And I mean, that's how it's always been, right?
Like,
the whole thing is that you have these faceless entities that are fighting for completely abstract, you know, purely, you know, political or financial reasons. And then they whip up the propaganda machines to get kids involved and soldiers and all that stuff. And then people die and it's horrible. And it never ends. And I think you're right in that, like, there definitely is an aspect of the fandom and of the franchise that is, you know, rooted in the politicking and kind of like who's backstabbing who.
But
I think the larger, and I think it's to the point of what the person in the tweet was saying, is that, like, the larger, I think, point of the story is that when you're on the ground as soldiers, none of that shit matters. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what matters is that there were, like, kids dying everywhere and families are being torn apart and innocent people are getting blown up. And the fact that the show can keep that drama compelling while still throwing in all of this intrigue is, I think, what makes it good.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It doesn't matter, really.
I feel like the only purpose of, like, fully grasping that chart that I was showing earlier is if you are particularly interested in the covert ways that that space capitalism is destroying Earth, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, so how that's what that graph is like, how is the Bene Gesserit group abusing the Earthians and their resources, and how are certain members of that group still funneling money into illegal military research and keeping the war going for their own benefit? So that's kind of what that is. I mean, it's still fun to kind of, and I do feel like you kind of have a need to have a general idea because the characters are talking about these things constantly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just sort of glazing over, like, certain parts of Evangelion 4.0 for me. I was like,
yes. Where it's like, yeah, in 4.0, there was a part of it where I was like, Anna's just trolling us at this point, right?
Yeah,
like, he's just throwing in whatever gobbledygook he can just to mess with us.
Right.
But this week, I that chart was helpful, especially all the stuff with Belle.
Yeah.
That was the part where I was like, okay, what is this doing here? And I knew it was, like, for a purpose, and that chart helped me realize, okay, this is helping us understand what Prosper is doing. And to your point, it not only helps us understand, like, how the system is kind of built to screw everyone over, it kind of shows us all of the little strings that Prosper can pull on to unravel the system.
Right.
And that's kind of what she's doing, is she's pitting all these parties against each other, and she's kind of taking advantage of all these dominoes that have been in place for decades, and now she's just watching them all fall over.
Yeah, yeah. And I still don't know, like, to the full degree what her end game is. Like, I don't fully understand what Project Zero will necessarily accomplish, other than some sort of, like, vague human instrumentality thing that will allow Eri to maybe, like, exist in a more physical sense. But yeah, I mean, again, yeah, the chart was more like when she blew open all those Gundams that were already on Earth, it was like, why are those there? So if your question is, why are those there? Well, if you go look at the chart, it kind of tells you, like, who put those there and why they're there. But the answer is always to continue war, because war is financially viable, and it to continue keeping the Earthians down for cheap labor. That's pretty much it. So watching that all play out, though, was fun.
Yeah.
In, like, kind of the worst way. I don't know if there's actually... Was there any particular parts in this episode, though, that, like, you really wanted to touch on, James? Like,
I mean, there's the whole, I think as far as like, a lot of it was mostly plot stuff. It was, honestly, it was nice that we got to this point a lot faster than I thought, where pretty much everyone is figuring out what's going on.
Yeah.
Ghoul and Mirene are now aware that Shadik is sort of behind the plant attack and all that stuff, and the kidnapping of the president. I think character-wise, the only two moments that I thought were really, really worth kind of talking about were the kind of the place that Mirene has found herself, but also at the end there where Suleta has kind of come to the realization that Eri was trying to protect her from all this crap that her mom was going to pull.
Yeah.
And so both Mirene and Suleta, they're both kind of at this position where they're realizing, oh, we've just been puppets in this really big conspiracy that is way beyond us. And Prospera has been manipulating everybody.
Yeah.
And now they're both kind of in a position where I think they're going to turn and say, okay, now how do we stop this?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of wondering, like, because part of what, part of what Prosper is doing is mostly, I think, under self-interested revenge, right? Like, it's revenge for exploiting their technology to create war machines. It's about killing her husband and the events that led up to what happened to Eri. But she's also not sane. Right?
Like, or is she the most sane?
Yes. Is it we're all mad here and she's the only sane one? I don't know.
It kind of reminds me a little bit. My wife and I have been watching a really excellent show called The Good Lord Bird. It's about John Brown, the abolitionist.
Okay.
And his whole deal was that he was, and obviously these things are not like apples to apples, but his whole deal was he was living in the late 19th century, the late 19th century.
Yeah.
And he was looking around at America and the institution of slavery. And he was kind of losing his mind because he was like, how are we letting this still happen?
Yeah.
How are we letting this still happen? You know?
Yeah.
And he did everything that he could to try to fight against it, even when it, you know, broke laws and got people killed, because his belief was that if we're going to have to shed blood to get rid of slavery, that's what we got to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like Prospera is, in a way, kind of coming at it from the same angle where, yeah, she's motivated by revenge, but I think in her mind, at least, her revenge is working towards the greater purpose of creating a world that is somehow free of the war that got her family killed in the first place. And I think I think she is kind of in the position where she's like, you can't end the complex machine of forever wars without breaking a few eggs, with the eggs in this case being civilian lives.
Yeah, right? Because I was going to say, she's also taking advantage of Shadik. Now, Shadik's motives aren't completely pure either. I mean, it's probably to the Earthians' benefit in some way, but he's still looking to make financial gains off of it just by supplying the Earthians with better arms, like a Cold War sort of situation. But Mirene is like kind of on the edge of at least calming things down briefly, presuming that she gets the presidential election or whatever. When Prospera is like, yeah, I'm just going to take control of your tanks and make you fire on me so that I can fire on you. And so we can heighten the tension up to a boiling point. What does she seek to gain from that specifically, though?
Well, if my understanding of Project Zero is correct, and it's going to somehow give her the ability to control the permit. What I think is going to happen, and it might not be exactly this because the complexities of Gundam can boil my brain a bit sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think the idea is to get as many of these Gundams or as many of these mobile suits out on the field, engaging in combat, weakening all of the sides involved through the, you know, the constant warfare, and then basically taking control of all of them at once.
Oh.
And saying, now I'm the boss. I something like that. That might not be exactly, you know, the mechanics of it, but I think the idea is to basically get everyone distracted and weak with fighting, to get people to, you know, all these companies that have been secretly working on Gundams on the side without telling anyone, to get those Gundams out there on the field, and then she can use the Project Zero, the bits, to basically do what she did with that tank and just take control of all of it at the same time. I think that's a pretty good
guess, actually, as far as like where things are going to go. And I mean, there's a lot of other stuff we could talk about this episode. I don't know that it's as meaty as like this. This mostly felt like a cliffhanger episode, or just sort of like,
There's a rising action episode.
I
always call them table setting episodes, where in order to get to the crazy big climax, we got to get some stuff in order.
Right.
And
right.
That's mostly what this was doing.
Yeah. Cause I mean, the rest of this episode is it's Martin, you know, coming clean about Nika, which is good.
Nika's just sitting there.
Nika and Elon and Noria.
The worst version of the Breakfast Club imaginable.
Oh God, I would not want to be in that room right now. Noria has a total freak out. We see her fantastic sketches of dead things. Suleta does come out, and she seems to be, she watches the news at the end of this episode and seems to at least come to a realization about why Airy kicked her out of the Gundam, and that what Airy was doing is similar to what Martin was doing. I'm curious how far they'll take or be able to realistically take Suleta's like self-actualization towards the end here, because it still seems to me like it's a pretty big gap between where she is at the end of this episode versus being in a space where you can reliably trust her to make informed decisions about piloting a giant war machine.
Yeah.
In a complicated intergalactic war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I am very curious. I mean, at the pace the show has been going, we've been making a lot of progress on the story front, on the character development front. But man, we only have like a handful of episodes left.
And right. Yeah.
I could see this going for, you know, another 25. Whether or not that's what they have planned out or that's what the story's going to end up being, I don't know.
Did you crop this one this way on purpose?
I did. Well, partially because there was like another line on top and it was kind of distracting. But also I just find that to be a very relatable face.
Spacians.
Capitalists. Elon.
Elon.
I feel that every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sant. Oh, I can't. We can't start talking about.
No, we've already talked about Rumsfeld. We can't start talking about Musk on this podcast. Is this even about anime anymore?
It's all anime now.
All everything.
We're all just living. We're all just Earthians living under the Spacians' boots.
Oh, man.
Except our Spacians are too stupid to actually get into space. Anyway,
let's colonize Mars. All right. So, yeah, that kind of wraps it for Witch for Mercury episode 19. The kids are in an intergalactic conflict. Do you think, actually, I didn't consider this until now. Do you think people have said that, you know, maybe Ghoul won't make it to the end? I think he will, personally. But this setting would also be the perfect time for someone to accidentally get killed trying to escape the planet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like, at least in the Gundam shows I've seen, a lot of the really big character deaths usually get saved for like the last few episodes.
Yeah.
But I do feel like we're a little overdue.
We're a little overdue for someone to die.
Yeah, like truly. Yeah. I mean, you know, like to really up the stakes. And I feel like Martin's definitely going to die.
Martin? You think it'll be Martin? He just came forward, did his confessional and everything. Yeah. So now he can he's gonna die with no regrets.
Yeah. Maybe he's going to die saving Nika, right? Like he's going to redeem himself or what have you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they could do that, you know.
As long as Choo-Choo survives, I'm okay. You know.
If Choo-Choo doesn't make it out of this, I'm going to be messed up.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Yeah. Quanti 5 wants to remind us that Elon 4 died. Yeah, but it's been a while. That was like in the first core, guys. Like, yeah, freeze someone in carbonite. That would work. And Martin, if Martin dies, that's okay. I don't think anyone will be too...
Well, I mean, because as far as characters that we're emotionally attached to, I mean, we have, like, Suleta's not going to die.
Yeah.
Probably. Mirina is not going to die.
Yeah.
Ghoul, I think, he's a decent candidate. But he does also kind of, he's sort of basically like the proxy main character for everyone that isn't into the space lesbians.
Yeah.
And so if the show's going to be a two-seasoner, they're not going to kill him off for another, like, 20 episodes.
Yeah.
But it would still... I feel like his brother's probably going to die.
Mm-hmm. What if... I feel like they could do Nika. I think they could kill off Nika. And it would get us a little bit, like...
I don't know. I feel like...
She has to finally come to terms with what she did first, and then they would kill her off. That's narratively, that's how that has to work.
Quanti's saying goat girl could die. No, but who's going to take care of the goat then?
Could die.
No, the
you're like, no.
I forget her name, but the girl who takes care of the goat.
Yeah.
The one who makes the soup and stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I'm just saying also the goat, though.
I mean, Gundam's not that. So.
Can't kill a goat. Can't kill a goat.
Don't do anything.
Yeah. So, if we wanted to, what about Choo? They can't kill Choo Choo. That would anger the base. The base won't accept, like, the fan base would not accept a Choo Choo death.
No.
Yeah. Shadeek. That is a good point. Shadeek's number's up, guys.
Oh, he's so screwed. Yeah.
His number is up. He is found out by the end of this episode. Everyone knows. Prospera knows. Well, she always knew, but more importantly, like, Ghoul knows, and people who enforce shit. I forget the guy he was traveling with as his bodyguard.
The bigger guy.
Yeah, he was like military or something. Anyway, they're done. He's done. So they're gonna find wherever he's keeping his dad. Nearby, probably, like in some little, He's screwed.
And they're gonna find him with Shelley Miskovich, I'm sure. They'll both be right, just hanging out, drinking tea.
Do you think Grassley's dead though? I feel like that's the only thing that makes sense. Is like, in what world could he have become president and also kept him alive long term? Right? Like, that's a loose end. I know he's a kid, but I mean, if you're gonna do a little capitalist coup, like,
yeah, you don't do a coup if you're not willing to kill the person you're doing.
Yeah, right. So yeah, and there is always the possibility that Rembrandt comes back. Delling, like, he's not dead, he's just hospitalized.
Oh yeah, that's right, he's just in a coma. I forgot.
He's gonna wake up and be so mad. He's gonna be so mad. What did all these kids do?
I go into a coma for 1 week and all of a sudden it's Space War 3.
Space War 3, people are voting on who's taking my spot. I don't get to give
my daughter's input. Trying to take my spot.
My daughter got engaged to someone else. What happened to the nice Tanuki girl she was set up with, you know? Yeah.
I was already building them a registry.
What am I supposed to do with all these?
Now my future son-in-law has the worst haircut in the world.
So bad. So bad. I just closed the folder, but you know what? We're going to open it back up just to revisit how bad his hair looks. Which one of these screen caps is it?
It'll be one of the first ones, probably.
Yeah. Who is this? I think this is... Yeah. Right here. He's sitting pensively in a chair, just looking like a... Whoops, that's... There. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably the better angle.
I know. That actually looks like a style. Look, I'm not usually in favor of all the smoke and mirrors that go into politics. I think, you know, no one likes it, right? That being said, do you think JFK would have let Jackie O walk around with that haircut on the campaign trail? No.
No.
This is going to be the future first man of the Benneret group. And I mean, her hair is not looking so great either, but at least it's something. I don't.
At least, you know, there was an attempt.
That is just, I mean, that it genuinely looks like.
Someone give this man some extensions.
It looks like he got bubble gum stuck in his hair. And his mom had to do the best she could on short notice.
Ghoul's hair was legit. It was he got that haircut from a lawnmower. Like it's hack and slash. It's not good.
Why did he do it? Was it one of those like character growth, I'm gonna cut my hair things? Why even do this?
He said it was damaged because he was, you know, in the war and stuff. So like, you know, okay. Got all his hair was damaged from the war, James.
You just trim your split ends, get it layered.
Cut it also.
Wait, really?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, his hair was burnt. Like he had burned tips or whatever, which again, you're right. You could just cut the ends off. But
Stiletta cut it. That actually explains a lot. That actually 100% explains what it looks like.
Yeah. Okay. Don't let Stiletta cut your hair, guys. All right. Just.
She's girls eating midnight hams and no.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't have screencasts for Heavenly Delusion this week because Hulu's UI is not being friendly for screen capping, right, James?
Yeah, I don't know if it's some new DRM they're doing. Yeah. But even on Firefox, which is usually the go-to browser for that sort of thing, could not get it to work. So
yeah.
Sorry, y'all, but we're going to have to use our imaginations.
Yeah, this is an imagination time now, so we're going to have to paint pictures. So this week, it's actually awful that we don't have a picture of the alien lady.
Who's I know, there's alien. So much, there was so much that was screen capable this week. I didn't get any of it.
Yeah. Chat is going to have to once again double check us in the comments on these names, but it opens with Kona. And
I have it up, I think.
Her name is
It's not on the wiki. Is it Asura? I think it's Asura. Right?
Yeah, Asura. Yeah. Right. Asura, so yeah. So it's Kona and Asura. I didn't notice the first time that we saw Asura was a couple of episodes back, to my knowledge. And that's when we first kind of find out that this girl from that class committed suicide. I do not recall, like, because they showed her body hanging. Maybe it was all in silhouette and that's why
they showed her head once before this episode.
Mm.
Briefly.
Was it bald?
Yeah, oh, it looked like that. Yeah.
Okay. She had
the whole deal.
So I must have missed that. So for some reason in my head I thought she looked like an average human child. And so so this was something for me. I was like, what?
I could have imagine how shocking that would have been.
Yeah.
Because in this episode, they're just playing it off like, yep, that's her.
All the kids are totally cool with it. You know, no one treats her any differently than how she looks there.
Which is good.
Yep. But we see that she has, I don't know, like, she's like evolved or ascended or something beyond what even these kind of superpowered kids have, because other than, you know, the veiny cortex that is ever present in her character design,
the mega mind.
Yeah, she's got like mega mind stuff. It looks like she has got like the full array of psychic abilities. So that telepathic, telekinetic, like she can levitate.
She can like astral project. I don't know.
Project, I think, or something like that. Can control.
It's implied she's the one that's manipulating the cameras.
It's implied that she's the one, because she's shown here while alive, kind of able to manipulate technology. Yeah, she has extra fingers. She's, what's that called? Pterodactyl?
Polydactyl.
That makes more sense than the dinosaur thing I was saying. Yep. Polydactyl. Which, fun fact, Hannibal is polydactyl in the books. But yeah, she's polydactyl. We've seen that the technology is being messed with currently, and we have also seen via Mimi Hime that, I guess I say currently, but because of the timelines, I don't literally mean currently. Mimi Hime can still see like a projection of Asura like floating.
Yeah. After when death. She was even like, even after she like, cause she like, when she hanged herself, she went for like, she broke her neck, like she was dead instantly, but she was still able to communicate with Kona.
Yeah.
So.
And there's also when she, before she killed herself, when she would talk to them, it almost sounded like it was two voices. Oh, like there was this overlapping sound that they did that was kind of cool. And it at least gave me the impression that maybe she was speaking both vocally and telepathically simultaneously. And so that was causing that to happen. But yeah, just a really strange entity. Don't really know what exactly led to her being that way.
And then there's, we don't even necessarily know why she decided to, are we allowed to say, how do we even phrase this? I guess I already said that she hanged herself, but she unalived herself. But all she said was she understood like her purpose or like the role that she's supposed to play.
Yeah.
And that she needed, my understanding is she was trying to subvert that by taking her life.
I don't know if it's one of those things or if it's one of those like Heaven's Gate sort of culty scenarios. Only really worked because people have actual superpowers in this series, where she was able to shed the mortal coil and is now, I don't know, just sort of free floating around, you know. So that was all really strange. We've also we also saw that she perhaps trained Kona somewhat in his ability to see, which has led to the, you know, the drawings and everything. She was working with him on that. But it's just a really strange episode because we also saw more behind the scenes sort of stuff for the Institute itself. Right. Uh-huh. And this just seems like it's some weird magnet school that like rich people threw their kids into.
I mean, you mentioned the cult. There's the letter that oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on their names. Our modern day crew.
Maru and Kiriko.
Thank you. The letter that they find at the other like kind of
the branch office.
The branch definitely makes it sound a little bit like a cult. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It says the hell of the outside world, like come to, you know. That's the cult speak right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a cult orphanage magnet school, Frankenstein.
Yeah. Because up until this point, I kind of was assuming that all the kids currently in there were like bred and then raised in there. But now it's seeming like some of it could, and Kiriko points this out, like they have families. So some of them, I think their parents were like.
The director lady says that like, they're getting like batches of kids coming in at 14 or at
15. Yeah. So they're just, which almost feels a little late to try and pull this off. Like if you grab a random 14-year-old, like as parents, you're like, yeah, I'm going to send you to a special academy where gender doesn't exist really. And we, you know,
I'm starting to think that our kids might be different. Mm. The main group of kids, because they talked about how like they were all raised specifically in a very controlled environment with no sex education. Like,
right. And so you can't just drop a 14 or 15 year old and say, well, they've never had any sex education. It's like they've been exposed to enough stuff that they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those kids, I'm pretty certain were born and bred, or at least from a very young age. Right. Like,
before. Yeah.
Obviously the lack of sex education did not help.
Yeah.
In regards to preventing them from noodling around. But that seems to have been the goal, was to not only get these kids to have these special powers, but to prevent them from procreating ever.
Yeah.
For reasons.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we even see that there's like some, again, politics going on about like who moves up the ranks within the Institute itself. They've got all the high-tech robots and everything that are still doing that. The interesting thing is that it's almost like Asura, which I don't know enough about this specifically, but that name is also mythological, I think, in nature within, like, I've heard, I'm now Googling it, Asura. Indic religions, power-seeking demons related to the more benevolent devas in Hinduism. In the Buddhist context, the word is sometimes translated as titan, demigod, or anti-god.
Oh, so, yeah, like the Asura's Wrath.
Yes, like Asura's Wrath. And I know that there was an anime film that came out that used that name as well. But I'm kind of wondering, like, if she is again, like, manipulating the technology in the Institute now, specifically to help Kona get laid.
I mean, the ultimate wing woman, if true.
If true, right?
It's the long game, or it's like, yeah. It's going to take probably a few years, but
yeah,
we're going to make it happen.
But it's alarming to me that I don't know has anyone informed Tokyo specifically that she's pregnant?
Not to my knowledge. It seems like they're keeping that from her. We know that there was a scene where the doctor said, "You're just fine. Nothing's wrong with you. Don't lift anything heavy."
Yeah.
And she goes, "Okay." But then the next time we see them, they've completely gone back on that. And they're like wheeling her
in a wheelchair. And they're telling people that she's not going to be going to class and stuff like that. Yeah. So I don't know if they like aren't telling her that she's pregnant, but are telling her that like, I'm
she's
wondering.
Sick or yeah, I don't know. She seemed confused. So
yeah. I'm assuming they're going to keep her under like tight observation because I don't know that they've ever had these kids with these powers and whatever they've done to like introduce those powers to them, procreate before.
No, they definitely haven't. They didn't even seem to think it was possible.
Yeah.
I think mostly because they had just never told them what sex is. But they also leave them unsupervised for extended periods of time and a bunch of unlocked rooms. I'm just saying that for a bunch of scientists, these guys made some pretty amateur hour mistakes. Even that one anime with the forced marriage class knew to put some locks on the doors.
Yeah, right.
At least limit them to the couch.
Don't make it easy is all that we're saying, right? I don't know if they thought, well, if we don't ever teach them about it, they just won't. And was that the brilliance behind? Yeah.
They've obviously never watched a Natural Geographic or Discovery documentary about any form of procreating life ever. So
yeah, apparently. So I'm worried for her in general, although we've more or less figured out that she has Maru. Like Maru's the...
Well, the non-synchronous plot that was basically confirmed this week, right?
Yeah.
When the story guy that they were talking to said that 15 years ago he grew up basically. He didn't say as much, but he said he basically heavily implied that he grew up in that in the Institute, and then he got kidnapped and taken to a weird. Misandrist colony.
Oh, I thought he was trying to say that the Institute was a weird misandrist colony.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I was like, because he says I grew up in this Institute, and if I'm remembering right, it cuts back to the scene of the people arguing about who's going to get the promotion, but then it shows like his version of it, and it doesn't even, to me, it was so far removed from what this place was, and like it showed him seeing the women hung from the walls. So I'm like, is this like a Mad Max like post-apocalyptic? What the hell is this?
The interesting thing about Juichi is like we don't know what if anything he's saying has any basis in his experience. Like he's a storyteller by trade. At first we're like, well, maybe there's a grain of truth and he's built, you know, a greater story around it. And so I was thinking, well, maybe he was one of the kids at the school, but then the rest of this is bullshit. But I do think, but then if he was one of the kids, I think at that same school, he wouldn't need to make up the story that he made because he'd have some really wild story from how they all have superpowers or something. So, Yeah, don't know if any of that's true. I feel like the only part of his stories that had any real relevance is that photograph he had of the angel, which basically looked like Asura.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think...
Are the two girls that got murdered, is that the two girls that were making out by the tree?
No, I don't think so. I don't think any of that was, like... I don't think any of that really happened. Okay. I think it's just full of shit. I mean, and they talked about also, like, he was just milking money out of them because they had found the place that they wanted to go. It was the building directly behind his van. And so he moved the van so they couldn't see the symbol on the name placard and then just held him up to, like, keep getting money out of them. So, anyway, and that's when they went into the branch office and discovered, like, that there are facilities, and now they're on their way to the facility. I think in Nara, they said it in there where the facilities were. One of them was in Nara. I just can't remember if that's the one specifically that they were going to. Theo, no, we don't want an answer. No spoilers. I don't know if it'll come up later or if we're just gonna have to read the manga, but I am worried. I'm mostly worried about Tokyo because, I mean, Maro doesn't, he's not with her now. She could die, James.
I'm assuming that all these kids are going to be dead by the time we catch up with them.
I mean, at this point, we know that
Doctorman?
Oh, yeah. Shiro. Shiro's dead. Mime Hime's dead. Cuckoo is dead via pot.
the number one killer.
Yeah. And who else am I? I mean, there may be others that we haven't linked back to, like other man eaters that they encountered, right? Oh, yeah. Thanks. Andy says he loves my nail color. Thank you.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. It's gold.
Yeah.
But just it was a pretty wild episode in general, but do you feel like we are heading towards the end game here?
Right? Yeah, I mean, we only have, what, like four episodes left, probably?
I think so. I mean, there's probably going to be eventually enough material for a second season, so can't, like, expect everything to get answered. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, this season ends with them making it to the facility.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking, is that would be, like, the last episode.
So. Yeah, it was them finally getting there, so... With that said, we did want to catch up on Oshinoko real quick. So Oshinoko, like I said at the top of the podcast, this has been a major show for High Dive this season. People are definitely tuning in to watch what started out as a fan reincarnated as an idol's baby into a kind of like a murder mystery plot that also shames the Japanese entertainment industry as much and whenever it is necessary to do so, which is all the time. And there was also some crossover with the most recent episode. I'm using the term controversy really lightly because I'm not trying to be buzzy about that, but there was an article we published and some comments made by Hana Kimura, who was a wrestler who appeared on a reality TV show, who tragically died by suicide a couple years back. In reaction to really heinous cyberbullying over what ended up being like a non-incident, but people just like went after her.
Now, was the incident analogous to what happened in this?
Yeah. I would have to
put up with another actress or a.
It was a situation. She was on Terrence's house, which was a bunch of celebrity type people inside of one house living together sort of thing. And
Big Brother, basically, like the Japanese version of Big Brother.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And I think the incident regarded like a disagreement or misunderstanding that was at least that's the way it was conveyed through the editing on the show that may have amounted to like pushing on someone's hat or something like that, just like a barely physical reaction to a disagreement. Definitely seen worse on Jersey Shore. But just sort of exploded into this like negative storm. And so Aka Akasaka, who is the author of the manga version of this, also the creator of Kaguya-sama, we did an interview with him within the last month, and he commented without naming names that one of the inspirations for the show did relate to a incident that happened on a reality TV show. And we see how that got interpreted in Oshinoko this week with
Akane.
I was going to call her Asuka. Akane's struggles, because she's on a weird reality show with Aqua and a bunch of other, you know, talent types.
Yeah. All teenagers.
All teenagers playing a part. You're just kind of trying to up your rep or show your versatility or show your marketability. I don't think anyone on it is truly looking for like a romance. Again,
kind of the angle of the show, right? Like the show is like explicitly trying to craft some narrative about the dating, whether or not it happens organically, right?
Is that
my understanding right?
Yeah, but I guess also important to keep in mind, everyone is a minor. So like even the idea that like you're making a TV show about a bunch of underage people in the hopes that they'll hook up, like it's weird. I would not.
That show's not happening. No TV station in the world would ever produce this show because they would be sued into oblivion.
Can you imagine like just like what you're supposed to get really excited about, a couple of like 14 or 15 year olds maybe making out and you're an adult?
It's just the legal ramifications are, and they touch on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. The show kind of tries to acknowledge that, like, hey, what we're doing here is like, I'm not even sure how it's legal. And it's like, yeah, there's no way this would ever. I mean, yes, the idol industry has all of these elements involved with, you know, the way they market their stars. Although, yeah, I cannot like,
that's
imagine
a can this. Of worms. Yeah.
There is no reality in which the show works out well unless it is 100% scripted
and right
from the beginning.
Yeah, we're not equating this with like a CW drama that happens to take place with high school aged characters. It's different. Yeah,
they're all played by adults that can, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know how. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all played by like baby-faced adults or something like that.
Do you remember we tried, it wasn't a romance show, but we tried to do a kid reality show that Kid Nation back in like the mid-2000s. And it was like you stick a bunch of teens in a ghost town and have them all like live together and like do little competitions. And that show was controversial because like these poor kids were exhausted and stressed and being exploited. And it didn't get past one season. And that, you know, they were like 9 and no one was making out and people
were
still
9.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it's fascinating. I watched it when it aired because I was like, this is going to be a train wreck. And it kind of was, but it was.
That sounds really familiar. Like a lot of the aspects, I'm like, oh, I probably saw commercials for this on TV at the time and did not watch it. I hope they're okay. They're still there.
Yeah, I mean, it was more like, it wasn't Fear Factor, but it was more, you know, they were like competitions and they had like boats. It was more like Survivor, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But still.
But they like, they were supplying them with food and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And, like, they were feeding them. Places to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But they weren't, the moral is they weren't encouraging them to smooch on camera. Right. Which is not something you should do with children.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it, and still ended up with a lot of controversy around it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Oshinoko has been pretty heavily like hitting the nail on the head with how Japanese entertainment industry goes. And this one in particular does focus on minors because we see how awful the blowback is because of the editing to Akane when she's sort of made the villain, which is something that happens in reality show. Reality show editing is notorious for trying to make a narrative or character arc out of real people who aren't following a script. And that also sometimes calls for a villain. Sometimes people are edited in the villain. Sometimes really shitty people get through, you know, the vetting process because they know they'll make for good television. In this
case, they intentionally pair up people that will not get along because
that's like this person seems like a narcissist or something. We should definitely let them onto the show because it'll aggravate everyone else. And then we can let them destroy their own lives on television by showing the world how horrible they are. Like in a way, I almost feel bad for like the people with bad personalities who get like, they think, oh, this is my thing. You know, I'm hot shit. I'm going to be on this TV show. Cause they're too dumb to realize that they're just shitty people and people don't like them. And that's why they don't have any friends, et cetera, et cetera. But
then we also validate them with fame and, you know, attention. Yeah. And so it's
fame and attention. But then I'm also like, they're horrible people, but are they so horrible that we need to like prop them up on TV so everyone can hate them?
Right. Yeah.
Instead of just their immediate circle hating them, you know, do they deserve that? Lindsay always coming out for the villains. Okay. So with Oshinoko, though, the most that was probably the highlight of not the highlight, but the main crux of the most recent episode is just like how bad cyberbullying is for these young celebrities. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like that goes beyond Japanese entertainment industry. I think that's just like the internet everything. And any kind of fame. Yeah.
People don't like whenever anyone has the opportunity to anonymously be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say anyone because I mean, I don't do that. And I know a lot of people that don't do that, but there are plenty of people that do, enjoy going into the comment section and just being horrible. I read a really sad story about a man whose mother became like a weird cyber stalker to some celebrity. I don't know if it was Meghan Markle, but it was like some big thing. And she was like sending death threats and to the point where she was being investigated by law enforcement for some of the threats she was making about this person. And unfortunately she actually, she ended up taking her life when she was basically told that she was going to be arrested for like criminal, like stalking and assault. But the point of the story is that this guy was like, my mom was just like she was just, as far as I knew, just a regular lady. You know, like she was not an obsessive, you know, like she'd never done anything like this in real life. Like she
never gotten kicked out of the PTA or anything like that for being aggressive.
But she got sucked into these online circles that basically made her feel like she was fighting the good fight for, you know, whomever she was a fan of or whatever institute she was defending, and that got her to say some really horrible, reprehensible things that she can't take back.
That's just, I feel like there's probably a psychology to it that is just mind-boggling to me, I guess. I mean, a lot of us, like one of the episodes in Oshinoko is called Ego Surfing, which is, you know, the something that I am guilty of having done at various points and don't recommend people do if you have any kind of interaction with the public at large. And like my interaction is very small. Like I am, people sometimes treat me kind of like a big fish in a small pond. I don't even feel like that much about it, but people have talked about me, I guess, on the internet. Ego surfing is just, it's horrible, especially if you're getting the kind of attention that like Akane was getting. Like mine has never been anywhere to that extent where there was like, I've never been the main character of Twitter. Let's put it that way. Like that's the whole thing, right? Akane in this is, she's like the main character of Twitter for like a long time, for like several weeks actually. But if you ever find yourself in that position, the advice that it's not actually Aqua that gives it. It's
what's her name? Red Hair Girl.
Yeah, Red Hair Baking Soda Chan, which is her official nickname, right? Baking Soda
Ruby,
Chan.
Ruby's friend.
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah, or they're not even friends. They're just like co-idols now. That right?
They're Ruby's partner in Idol Crime.
Says, you know, that log the fuck off, and you absolutely should. Like, if for some reason you find yourself in the center of this sort of thing, like, delete the app from your phone and just go outside. You're going to feel anxious the whole time because you're not looking at it and you know what's happening and you feel like you need to, like, be on top of it, but you really have to, like, not. You have to completely disconnect and assume it will blow over. It doesn't always blow over. I mean, people say, like, just ignore it. I mean, sometimes it leads to more drastic things that actually interfere with, like, your ability to leave your house and stuff. You know, you don't want to get swatted or anything like that. But for the most part, if it will blow over and you have to, like, not look at or engage with it.
I think my favorite kind of wrinkle of the what they're talking about, because thankfully Akane does survive. She does not succeed in her attempt to take her own life. Mm-hmm. And so she has the opportunity to bounce back and kind of learn how to more healthily kind of deal with this pressure that she's under. And I thought that one of the most interesting things, which I think I see all the time, I mean, I do it myself, is that you kind of have to, even when your job or your social life or whatever demands that you are engaged with, like, social media and mm-hmm. online and the public, that you kind of have to build a character that, you know, is you, but isn't you, isn't all of you, right? Like, it's not, and that's where I think sometimes the mistake people have made is that in their effort to be as, like, to promote those parasocial relationships that can drive a lot of that content creation, they make all of themselves available, or they put all of themselves into what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least for me, you know, especially since I partake in the most popular job in the internet, criticism, I found that truly sometimes what you have to do is you kind of have to treat that person as, like, another person. And I'm not saying that in the sense of, like, you know, I nothing that I write and nothing that I say is ever not true, right? I'm more like, my opinions are always my opinions, and the arguments that I make are the arguments that I'm making. But the way that I present them, the ideas that I choose to put out there versus the ones that I kind of keep more to just private conversations, all of that stuff, you have to put a lot of thought into. But if you can do that, and if you can create, it's kind of like a suit of armor where it's like, oh, you know, they're yelling at James Beckett, the Twitter guy. And that's fine, because James Beckett, the Twitter guy, is just one aspect of my life. But I can turn that off. I can log off. I can delete the app for a while, and I can continue to do my job. I can continue to, you know, have my professional and personal relationships, and it's all kind of insulated from that. And I think that they're right that that's maybe one of the steps that Akane needs to take.
Yeah, like, you can, in this instance, she should have maybe just hung out with her mom for a little bit. Like, I can hang out with my mom. She doesn't understand what I do for work. And so all the problems relating to work are kind of inconsequential in some ways. And it's like, okay, let's just go garage sailing or something.
Yeah. Or I forget her name, but the girl with the cat mouth.
Right.
She's like, I'm the aloof, kind of jokey, whatever girl.
Yeah.
And that's the role I'm playing on this show. That's not me.
Yeah.
But that way, like, if anyone has anything bad to say about that girl, I know that I can control that, because that is, like, that's kind of a construct that I'm making so that they don't get to me, right?
Right. Yeah. She said she's like the comedic sidekick, basically, mm-hmm. where she's just there to, or like comic relief. So she's just there to, like, make a witty remark, to throw some comedy in there. Isn't really there for anything else. And career-wise, if that's all that she's pursuing in entertainment anyway, is that what that persona is, then it doesn't really matter.
I feel worried that Ruby is not going to be able to do that. I think that's what they're setting up.
Yeah, I don't think she understands that really yet. The idea of, like, putting up a facade, because obviously Aquamarine, his whole name is Aquamarine. Aqua does, right? Because, like, the guy on the show is not anything like the more reserved, sort of darkly cynical character that we see. So,
well, he kind of has to too, just, and this is maybe one area where I think the reincarnation angle makes the story a little more interesting. I don't know if they've explored it a lot yet, but he has to put on a facade because he's like a 45-year-old guy. Yeah, that's now. True. Yeah. Like he can't be his real self because everyone would think he's a freak of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was precocious when he was really little and they got him gigs or whatever. And then it was like, well, I mean, once that persona gets older, then you're just sort of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But Ruby's still a kid. Like she was only ever a kid, right? She
never got
to that point. So
yeah, I think she only lived to be about 12 or something. So she's already older.
That begs the question. This is something I've always wondered with these reincarnation stories. Uh-huh. Do you think, Lindsay, that you age? Because you're a mom, right? So you obviously, you know how much biological age impacts like emotional maturity and stuff and all that.
Sure, yeah.
When you're reincarnated in like these anime settings,
okay,
do you age linearly? You know? So like if you die when you're 30, and then you spend another like 18 years as a pretty anime boy. Mentally, are you like in your 50s?
Okay.
Or do all those hormones and all that, does that, you know, when your brain isn't fully formed when you're like 5, do you regress? Like is Ruby almost 30 now? Or is she still like a teen? I think about this a lot. It really bothers me. Yeah. Because I'm like, a part of the reason I had a hard time latching onto the show is because Awkward creeps me out.
Yeah.
Because the thought of talking to a kid that's actually older than me,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, that's creepy.
Yeah. And you're
like, hey, I secretly know way, you know, I know the secrets of life and death and the hereafter, and I have fundamental knowledge about the nature of the soul that would completely shatter your concept of reality. But also, I have the brain of a 50-year-old, but I'm in the body of like a 15-year-old. That's scary to me.
It's Freaky Friday weirdness. I think that. See, where I'm at with the question is more like, if they start at 30, right? He started at 30, even as a baby. Like, I'm trying to think whether his maturity level kind of holds until he physically meets up with it, or if it's, as you said, it gets added onto it, right?
Because
well,
so
more
much
life
of your,
experiences, right? Yeah.
Well, and I feel like once you hit, like, mid-20s, right, once your brain fully develops,
mm-hmm.
So much of aging is just experience. Like you get it all the time, or like you'll talk to someone who's like in their 70s or 60s and they'll tell you that like in my head I'm still 30,
right?
It's my body is all old, but in my head I don't feel like a different person. But you definitely feel like a different person from like 15 to 25. Like you're
sure,
a different person.
Oh yeah.
And so if we're accommodating the magical whatevers that allow baby Aqua to think and conceive of things like an adult would, with all of like the decision making and all that he's capable of, I feel like he should be like a wise old man, kind of.
Yeah.
But then that also makes me think that maybe for Ruby it's like what you said, where she kind of has to get back to her, I don't know.
Yeah, because she didn't reach full adulthood, so it's like she hasn't gone through that development and she hasn't lived through any kind of situations that would be specific to that development. You know, like she's never had to file her taxes.
Never had to pay rent. Right.
She never had to pay rent. She's never had to develop any of those skills and still hasn't. So I would, maybe that's why she does seem far less more mature than Aqua. So that's what I think with it. I mean, I think we are probably supposed to ignore that even if they are reincarnated with the same knowledge and whatnot, like physically their brain would be probably unable to absorb all of that at the start.
The fact that they could talk as babies, I was like, whatever, it's fine. It's Luke who's talking magic. That's okay.
Yeah. So I think we solved that mystery, James.
Good.
Yeah.
Now I can sleep at night.
Yeah, good. Yeah, you can come up with new ones for next week. So I think that about wraps it up this week. We'll be back next week, likely with Jackie. She's still super jet lagged, so I told her she did not have to be here, and I hope she is taking a nap. So
her brain is in a different time zone. So,
yeah, her brain is still in a different time zone, just like mine a little bit. So, all right. Thanks again for coming on to the show, James. And we'll see all you guys next week, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Bye.
Toodles.